the gifted Booker. Backpedaling three. Got it. Big shot.
Pick your poison. The Suns in the game five got into the paint. Now they're knocking down their shots with confidence. Ooh, and Devin Booker is staying on script.
Another miss, and Booker is there. Rebounding advantage plus six. Cameron Johnson is three. Outside feeds to Booker, who kicks it in again.
All right.
I'm not sure about that. He doesn't look questionable to me, but.
Booker three. Another one. Again, Gasol is on Chris Paul. Here comes Booker. A three. Good. Booker's got 27.
That was all in the first half. Every single one of those highlights that you heard. Devin Booker goes off for the Phoenix Suns with 33 of his 47 points in the first half as the Suns go on to win 113-100 in Game 6 to win their first-round series over the defending champion Lakers. Suns, the 2-seed, winning it 4-2 over the 7-seed Lakers. We'll have much more on that win for Phoenix, and as they move forward, we know who their opponent will be in the second round as well, as another team wrapped up a series on Thursday night. We're going to talk much more about the NBA playoffs coming up in this sports ticket. And welcome into the sports ticket here on KD Country 94 on this Friday, June 4th. Also, the Kansas City Royals winning streak up to four games. Give you an update on the NHL playoffs and the French Open as well. As, again, the top seed in the French Open had some problems on Thursday on the women's side. So we'll talk about that and much more coming up here on the sports ticket. We're going to start locally, though. Momentarily, we're going to be joined by Sawyer Hovenstein, the new head coach of the Rock Hills football team, also track and field teams in junior high and high school, and set to be the athletic director there at Rock Hills as well. So we'll hear from Sawyer Hovenstein coming up momentarily. First, let's get to the other local sports notes that we want to pass along. Congratulations to the area athletes who claimed championships, the Kansas State High School Activities Association State Track and Field Championships at the meet in Wichita Cessna Stadium this past weekend. They've been named our NCCastSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athletes of the Week. Southeast Saline dominated the 3A ranks on the boys' side. They claimed a team title last Friday. Individual state champions included Dylan Sprenker in the 800 and 1600, Chase Bogue in the 100-meter hurdles and 300-meter hurdles, and Southeast boys' 4x400-meter relay team, or 4x800-meter relay team, I should say, took first place. Also, Gentry Alderson of Southeast claimed two state titles on the girls' side of the 1600 and 3200. Brenna Walker of Beloit, a state champion in the 3A boys' javelin. On Saturday, state champions crowned in six different events for area athletes in Class 1A. Reagan Bales winning the 800 and 1600 on the boys for Osborne. Lauren Dubert of St. John's winning the girls' javelin. J.C. Vath winning the girls' 3200. Tori Slavic, J.C. Vath of Lincoln, Tori Slavic of Thunder Ridge taking the title in the girls' discus. And then the St. John's boys team of Ben Thompson, Nicholas Greenwood, Timmy Greenwood, and Braden Prez winning the state title in the 4x400-meter relay. So those are the state champions from the area, and they are NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athletes of the Week. Also, coming up on Saturday in Mankato, it'll be the 6th Annual Twin Valley Conference Northern Plains League State Line All-Star Basketball Games. Again, those are being held tomorrow in Mankato. The girls' game slated to start at 3, boys at 5. Pre-game and introductions beginning at 15 minutes prior to the game, so you'll want to get there if you're going for the girls' game between 2:15 and 2:30, likely to get yourself situated. And it's 2:30 and 2:45. You definitely want to be in there between then because they'll get things rolling about 2:45 with all the pregame festivities for the girls' contest. Again, the boys will follow. Admission's $5 for adults, $3 for students. If you're wanting to go to the State Line All-Star Games, Twin Valley Conference in Nebraska, Northern Plains League in Kansas, multiple area athletes are competing. You can find full rosters at ncksports.com as, again, it's a lot of athletes that are competing from the area, and I had that pulled up. I'm just going to click on the link here. For the girls' side of things, Lauren Dubert of St. John's Tipton, Madeline Davis and Rennie Raby of Thunder Ridge, Shay McMillan of Southern Cloud, along with Athena Livey from the Warriors as well. Also, Lakeside's Kylia Geisler, Cadence Nondorf of Sylvan Lucas, Jocelyn Lemke from Rock Hills, Callie Walters of Osborne, and Skylar Harrington of Chase are the teams there. Coaches will be Leah Bergman of St. John's Tipton, the head coach, as well as her assistant coach during the season. Stacey Perez will be the assistant coach there. On the boys' side, Jeff Starkey from Sylvan Lucas, the head coach, Chris Brockman of Natoma, the assistant coach. As you look at the State Line All-Star Games and the boys' participants and selections from St. John's Tipton, Dalton Schmidt, Wyatt Eberly of Lakeside, also Jared Gillett and Davion McDonald from Rock Hills, Kyler Seaman of Thunder Ridge, Landon O'Hare of Lincoln, Jonah Hill from Sylvan Lucas, also Jason Engling and Jace Dickerson from Natoma, and Cameron Eberhardt of Wilson were selected to play in the State Line All-Star Games. Can they start tomorrow? Girls game at 3, boys at 5, Rock Hills High School in Mankato. Speaking of Rock Hills High School, the Grizzly football team has a new head coach, approved at last month's May board meeting of USD 107. Sawyer Hobenstein is the new head football coach as teams are getting prepped and starting their workouts here at the first part of June this summer, getting ready for the 2021 high school football and sports seasons. We had a chance to catch up with Hobenstein, and here's that interview with the new head coach, Sawyer Hobenstein at Rock Hills. Welcome to the Sports Ticket here on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. Sawyer Hobenstein joining us, the new head football coach at Rock Hills High School, as well as track and field, and soon to be the AD as well for Rock Hills High School. So first of all, Sawyer, thanks for taking a little bit of time to join us. When you kind of look at things, I know what we always like to do with a new coach in the area, and you were approved in May to be the new coach at Rock Hills there. What are some of the things that people should know maybe about your coaching background and about you as a whole coming into Mankato?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you having me on. Coaching background, well, I grew up with my dad being a football coach, defense coordinator, and moved us around the state a few times, ended up at Riley County. After high school, I went on and walked on and ran at Emporia State, and then after a year and a half, I transferred to K-State, and that's where I kind of began my coaching career. I started off just as a assistant high school track and field coach at Riley County, as well as the assistant wrestling coach for the junior high and high school there for my first 3 years, and I was offered an opportunity to join Rock Creek's middle school coaching staff, which I did for my last year as a college student. Mm-hmm. And after that, I got my first job at Valley Falls, north of Topeka. And I was blessed with the opportunity there to take over as a head football coach the same year I started teaching there. And I was there for 2 years and just accepted a job here at Rock Hills and looking forward to getting started.
Those 2 years at Valley Falls, you went 5-12 in that time, played in a very tough district this last year with the likes of Canton Galva and Clifton Clyde and Burlingame's of the World in your district. You went 3-5 there. But what were some of the things you learned in your time at Valley Falls about the eight-man game and that you might, you know, obviously move forward with as you come to Rock Hills?
Yeah, it was definitely a little bit of an adjustment, you know, being growing up 11-man, but I think we bridged that gap pretty well there, and I really grew to love the eight-man game. I think it's a really exciting game. A couple of things I learned while I was my 2 years at Valley Falls was the importance of having a plan when you take over a new program. To know the direction you want your program to go, I had to learn to think through everything aside from X's and O's for the program, from how your discipline policy is going to look, how you're going to practice, structure your practices, you know, creating expectations for coaches and players. And I think another thing you hear a lot is, well, what kind of culture do you want to build there? I learned being in a tough district and taking over a program that hadn't seen a lot of success in the previous years. I learned it all starts with relationships to get the program going off the ground. You can only push a kid as far as the relationship that you have with them. And I think that was a really big key component for us. We knew we were going to be playing a lot of tough teams, but just remaining positive, keep being that broken record, repeating the same things over and over that you want them to do. And eventually they start buying into that, and they just know each week we're going to get a little bit better and those wins are going to come.
So as you move forward now in your career and everything you're doing there, what stood out about Mankato? Why do you feel like the move to Rock Hills would fit you best?
Well, growing up in Riley County, I used to spend a lot of time in this area going to some of the track meets like the relays and such, so I was kind of familiar with the area. But really, I just knew Rock Hills has had a great track record in all their sports, including football. And I know a lot of strong programs come from this area of the state. You know, we play a lot of really solid teams year in and year out. And so when I first came up here, I knew I wanted to apply for this job. I came up here, and I had never been to Mankato specifically, but I was impressed with the facilities and the amount of care that goes into this school and this district. And after speaking with Mr. Myers, I knew that Rock Hills was somewhere that I was going to be supported, not only by the school district, but then meeting some people in the community, I knew that they were going to be supportive of us as well. And I knew this was a place that we were going to share a common vision for the program, and it was going to allow me to do what I believe needs to be done to be get this program to be successful.
When you look at your program as a whole, again, you'll be coaching track and field as well, but I think football is the focus since the spring sports are over and now you're starting the workouts for the fall here. But when you look at the group of kids that you have, what are you excited most about, and what are some of the things that are taking place this summer to get your team ready for the fall?
Well, first thing I know coming here, these kids here, they're great. They work very hard, and they want to be successful. They've been willing to put in that time to get better as well. We've kicked off summer strength and conditioning, and we're just rolling into that. We're going to focus on getting stronger and getting faster. We've been doing a lot of football skills each day after weights, you know, just trying to get our reps in, teach them our base of our offense and defense, kind of some of the techniques and fundamentals that we're going to use, some of the drills we'll be doing, and how we're going to teach those so they know what to do come August and we can just get right into it. So far, I think we have a really strong group of returning linemen that played a lot of RC minutes or even starters last year. And coming into this year, we have a large freshman class, and they had a lot of success in junior high. And we look to them to kind of push these older kids, compete for starting positions. And they also help give us some depth to our roster, which will be great. We even have two deep in some positions because of the size of this freshman class. We are looking to replace some of our main ball carriers from last season. And we're working on solidifying our QB for next year after graduating Jared Gillett. But we feeling really good about this group we have coming back. We know they want to improve from last year, and they've been working really hard, had great attendance to all of our football skills, and they've just been really locked into what we're doing.
Sawyer Hobenstein, the new head football coach, head track and field coach, and athletic director there at Rock Hills High School. Sawyer, thanks for taking a little bit of time. We'll look forward to chatting with you in the fall, and best of luck as you get prepared here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, so that's Sawyer Hobenstein again, the new head football coach there at Rock Hills, and also for high school, junior high track and field, and athletic director there at Rock Hills. We thank Sawyer for taking some time to be with us. If you missed any of that, that interview is posted on our Sports Ticket podcast at katycountry94.com coming up later this morning. And also, we have a story at katycountry94.com and ncksports.com telling you a little bit more about Sawyer Hobenstein. Again, first game for Rock Hills is slated to be on September 3rd against Lynn at home. So that's when his group will go on out. And again, they're working right now in the summer workouts, the weights, and getting themselves prepared for the 2021 season under new leadership there at Mankato at Rock Hills High School. All right, so we cover the local angle. Eight-man All-Star Games coming up next week, so we'll have a lot of coverage there coming up for that in Beloit. The 80 top seniors in the state in eight-man football will be meeting in Beloit next week. Good to have it back. Again, we missed it last year, so we're happy to have coverage in eight-man All-Star Games coming up next week from Beloit. Players will arrive on Tuesday. We'll have some features and all that on our area athletes and local players that are in the game, as we always do, leading up to the games coming up on Saturday on Katy Country 94 and on the 8-Man All-Star Radio Network at sunflowerstateradio.com, 8manallstars.com, coming up on Saturday. So stay tuned for all that. 6-Man All-Star Games are going on this weekend as well. We don't really have anybody of immediate area playing. There's 27 players from the 2020 season, the seniors that will gather for a 7 o'clock kick at North Newton at Bethel College this Saturday, coming up tomorrow there for the 6-Man All-Star Games, or All-Star Game, I should say, there on Saturday in North Newton. So that catches you up to date on what's going on as far as local sports are concerned. All right, we're going to go to the Royals here before we get into the NBA playoffs. Kansas City winning again last night.
Fly ball left center.
And it's dropped, and Dyson goes to third.
A big mistake by Minnesota. And here comes Dyson to score, and the Royals will take the lead.
Yeah, that's it was like a little league play. The Royals took a 6-5 lead and would go on to win by that final of 6-5. As you look at the game, it was back and forth throughout. Josh Donaldson opened the game and scoring with a solo homer for the Twins in the first, and then Salvador Perez answered that with a solo shot in the bottom of the inning to tie it at 1, and then tied at 2 in the bottom of the fourth. Hunter Dozier, a solo homer. Whit Merrifield, a sack fly, put the Royals up 4-2, but the Twins would score 2 in the top of the fifth, and Perez then again answered again with his second homer in the bottom of the fifth, put the Royals back up 5-4. Donaldson hit his second home run in the game in the seventh to tie it at 5, and then he heard the play that basically, it did. It looked like a little league play out there, and guys that were in the wrong spot, center fielder Gilberto Celestino, he stepped in front of the left fielder on a fly ball. It's a routine play, but neither I don't know if the left fielder was calling him off or if he was calling the left fielder off or what was going on in the play, but he stepped in front there, and you could tell that there was some miscommunication no matter who it was between there, as Celestino in, you know, shallow center goes out, ends up dropping the ball. So there's your first error, as you heard there, and then you have to understand, and I know you're flustered because you just made an error, right? But you have to understand who's on the plate, or who's on the plate, who's on the bases when you make that mistake. Man on the bases with Gerard Dyson, one of the fastest players in all of baseball history in major leagues, likely. And he's on the base pass. Got to know who's out there. And Gerard Dyson saw just a little flinch, made his way to third, and then it was a weak throw from Celestino, not to a cutoff or to third or second or anything. It was a weak throw to first base because he was frustrated, so he just got the ball back into the infield, and on that weak throw, Gerard Dyson came around third and scored and gave the Royals a 6-5 lead, which would end up being the winning run. So as a Royals fan, you're happy about it, right? But, man, if I was a Twins fan, I'd just – first of all, the pop-ups there, you should catch it. But, you know, they say bad teams find ways to lose. The Twins are now 22-34. They're struggling right now in last place in the AL Central. Royals won their 4 straight. They're 28-26. But the play is just – it's crazy to me that you see that in Major League Baseball. But you do. I mean, it's not – I should say it's crazy to me, but it's just – it was a wild play. Let's just put it like that. And the Royals benefited from it and ended up winning the game because of it as they got things finished off there later in the contest. Let's hear what Mike Matheny had to say about that final run that scored and the play that was not made by Twins center fielder Celestino. That's not the right cut. Let's try this one more time.
We talk about pressure. I mean, he steps on the field and he's on a base anywhere. It's going to be pressure. And so obviously gets a nice jump, gets a steal. And then, I believe their outfielders are conscious of the fact. And he was tagging up, and that's traditionally, I mean, usually that guy would be halfway on that play, but I think that put some pressure on him as well to come up and be ready to make a throw to third base. And then the wherewithal to watch, but the better part of that, or the other part, is Benny taking a hard turn. Benny putting pressure on the trail to where then they have to try to make a long throw into second base and Dice with a heads up play. So it was to us, if we can just keep being that kind of club where we're always looking for spots to where we can apply pressure and make them make a play and be ready to react if it doesn't happen.
So Mike Matheny talking about the play where the Royals end up getting the win 6-5 in the end over the Twins. It was the first of a 4-game set between the Royals and Twins. So a great start there for Kansas City, as again, they're now 28-26. Fourth consecutive win for the Royals. Obviously, you like the way things finished out there. You like Salvador Perez's back-to-back multi-home run games. He had done that against the Pirates in the previous series, the second game there on Tuesday, and then has back-to-back games with multiple home runs. He hit 2 of them against the Twins there last night in Kansas City as well. Scott Barlow pitched 2 innings of scoreless relief as Jacob Junis actually blew the save there in the 7th with the run that he gave up, but still got the win, 2-3 on the season. And again, Barlow with the save as he pitched 2 innings of hitless and scoreless relief. Had a couple strikeouts, Barlow with his second save again of 2020. So again, the Royals won it 6-5. They move on to play the Twins again tonight, the second game of the four-game series, as the Royals will send Brad Keller to the mound. He's really calmed down and starting to find himself a little bit. 5-4 with a 5.68 ERA here this season for the Royals. 50 2/3 innings pitched. He's going up against Matt Shoemaker of the Twins, who's 2-6 with a 5.90 ERA. 33 strikeouts to 19 walks. He's given up 10 homers this year, has Shoemaker. So another opportunity for the Royals offense to maybe get things clicking here tonight in Major League Baseball. Quick look at the standings in Major League Baseball. Again, the Royals in third place right now with a four-game winning streak going on. They're the hottest team in the Central right now. And actually, by a winning streak, they're the hottest team in the American League currently at 28-26. And multiple teams are 7-3 of their last 10, but the Royals have the four-game winning streak. They're now two games behind Cleveland, who has won two in a row. The White Sox in first place, 34-22, five games ahead of the Royals, three games ahead of the Indians, who are 30-24. Tampa Bay Rays in first place by two games over the Red Sox in the American League East. And in the AL West, the A's are one game ahead of the Astros and four games ahead of the Mariners in the National League East. The Mets, 3.5 games ahead of the Braves. Central, it's the Cubs in first place, 8 games above 500. They are a game and a half ahead of the Cardinals, and the Giants are a game ahead of the Padres in the NL West. A lot of good-looking records there at the top of that division, as the Giants 35-21, Padres 35-23, and the Dodgers are 33-23, two games behind. So some good records there in the NL West, as the Giants have the best record in baseball currently at 35-21. Just an update on Major League Baseball. Again, the Royals winning it last night 6-5 over the Twins in Game 2 tonight at Kauffman Stadium at 7:10. Talked to you earlier about Devin Booker going off in the NBA playoffs last night, where the Phoenix Suns took a 113-100 win in Game 6 to win their series over the defending champion Los Angeles Lakers, 4-2, the final count in the series. And Phoenix left no doubt in this one. They jumped out early. They were up 36-14 after one, 62-41 at halftime. Again, Devin Booker with 47 points and 11 assists, 33 of his 47 points coming in the first half. He was sensational last night and helped out with Phoenix to move on, as Booker finished 15 of 22 from the floor, 8 of 10 from 3, 9 of 9 at the free throw line. Just very efficient and all over it last night with, again, 33 of his 47 in the first half, kind of getting in there, setting the tone. They jumped out again, 36-14, as Booker made a three there toward the end of the first quarter, and the rout was on there. They ended up winning it by 13, 113-100, so a little bit closer game than what the first half score indicated it might be. But Phoenix was in control of this game basically from the start. Chris Paul had just 8 points, but he did have 12 assists, and obviously he's made a difference with this Phoenix team and putting them in the position that they're at, moving on to the second round of the Western Conference playoffs. And I tell you what, Devin Booker, you hear about all the names, right, and you've heard, and I'm not saying Devin Booker is not a name that people have heard, but you know, you look at some of these names that are out there right now, the James Hardens of the world, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving even, obviously LeBron James, and those kind of guys and names that you hear, Damian Lillard, you've heard. We'll talk a little bit more about him coming up in a little bit. But, you know, some of these names that you hear that have really established themselves and built their legacy continuing on, Russell Westbrook, guys that have built their legacy not from what they did during the regular season, but moving on into the postseason. Giannis is a guy that, you know, has built his legacy, obviously, in the regular season, but trying to take that next step in the postseason. Giannis, a very well-known commodity in the NBA. And like I say, people know who Devin Booker is, but here in 2021, Devin Booker's having a coming out party because he is here and everybody knows it because it's in front of the big audience. It's in the big time. It's in the NBA playoffs, and he had an outstanding series for the Phoenix Suns, and just looking forward to seeing more and more Devin Booker and what he can do. And man, he was impressive last night, and again putting himself on the postseason map now. Had a little bit of that last year when the Suns made that run in the bubble, but in the end, Didn't get anywhere in the playoffs there. This year they do. They acquire Chris Paul in the offseason, put the work in, and I think Chris Paul is obviously a guiding force in that locker room and able to kind of corral things and reel it all in and kind of focus on what it takes to win. Chris Paul's never won a championship, but he's won a lot of playoff games. He's won a lot of games in his career. A veteran that is a great leader, and unfortunately for him, has just been hampered by some injuries in the past. But he went down again a little bit with some pain in that shoulder last night. Didn't last long. He made it through. But, again, bringing in Chris Paul and guys like that are always going to help a team, and it clearly helped the Phoenix Suns so far this year, the number two seed going into the postseason and winning in six over the Lakers in that first round series. So you're looking at a team that clearly is playing good basketball right now. They controlled that game with the Lakers, as I mentioned. Devin Booker with 47 points, 11 rebounds. Nobody else. There was three other guys in double figures. Jay Crowder had 18 points, including 6 of 9 from 3. Like what Cameron Payne's doing a lot of times off the bench for this team. Also 10 points off the bench for Cameron Johnson. Hit a couple threes, and then 10 points added by Mikal Bridges for Phoenix. DeAndre Ayton was kind of held in check last night, but it was a Devin Booker show. Devin Booker's night, again, 47 and 11, 8 of 10 from 3, 9 of 9 from the free throw line, 47 points on 22 shots. That's extreme efficiency, folks. And Devin Booker just getting started, really, getting his legacy building for the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix is going to move on to take on the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets winning 126-115 in Game 6 at Portland on Thursday night. They trail by 14 in the third quarter, but Nikola Jokic turning in a great MVP performance, 36 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. Michael Porter Jr. had 26 as well, 6 of 12 from three-point land. Damian Lillard, clearly you can tell that, man, all the work that he has to do, everything that's on his shoulders right now for the Blazers, is it kind of showed through last night. He still had 28 points and 13 assists, so still a double-double. Only 4 rebounds, excuse me, so well off a triple-double, but he did still have the double-double. But 28 points on 8 of 20 shooting is a little bit different than what he had with the 55 the other night, and a game that they still ended up losing. Again, Damian Lillard with 28 last night. He went 9 of 9 from the free throw line, just 3 of 11 from three-point land. So it wasn't all there for Dame at Portland. The Nuggets are able to get the win 126-115 to move on to the second round. Now, obviously, Portland, when you're looking at this team, you know that Damian Lillard has to put the team on his back and on his shoulders. And that's what he's not able to do it all by himself, basically, is where we're going with that. Before I go on with Damian Lillard and the Blazers, I do want a couple other nuggets from, we're talking about the Nuggets. A couple other notes, I should say, to avoid confusion about the Nuggets. A couple other notes from that Suns-Lakers series. LeBron James had 29 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. He went 11 of 26 from the floor. We kind of said yesterday on the show that LeBron might have to have 40 for his team to come out and get a win, and that was obviously amplified early in the game. Anthony Davis tried to go last night for the Lakers, but that groin injury, he wasn't ready from the get-go. Somehow, Charles Barkley was talking about it last night. He's like, I don't even like how they did that. I don't like they put him out there. You technically can make the injury worse. Doctor cleared him, and Charles is like, I don't know that they should have cleared him to play. And when you saw him go out there, and the way he looked early, there were a couple moves where weren't probably natural there for the groin injury, and it was hampering him right from the get-go. He played just 5 minutes, didn't score, came out a little over five minutes into the game and never played again. Anthony Davis is a very key factor of what the Lakers want to do and how they want to move forward. So I think a lot of people are going to say, this hurts LeBron's legacy losing in the first round, which, by the way, it's the first time in LeBron's career that a team that he was on made the playoffs did not get out of the first round. So they were 14-0 previously in first round playoff series, as LeBron James's teams were. Now they're 14-1. And again, LeBron didn't get the help that he needed and didn't have the help that he needed at times with AD being out with a groin injury. When you lose a player of Anthony Davis's caliber, obviously that's going to change your team. It's going to change your ability to lead that team. And that's what the Lakers saw here in this series. And the Suns go on to win it again 4-2 to move on to take on the Nuggets, as we mentioned. So we told you the Nuggets winning 126-115. The big problem for the Blazers, as we mentioned, is Damian Lillard has to put everything on his back. And he was obviously disappointed with seeing the season and the playoffs come to a close last night for Portland. And following that game, he said, quote, "I mean, we didn't win a championship, so obviously we are now, isn't good enough. I don't know what a shakeup looks like or what changes will be made or could be made, but obviously as is, it wasn't good enough. We came up short against a team without their starting point guard and shooting guard and Will Barton and Jamal Murray. Obviously where we are isn't good enough to win a championship if it's not good enough to get out of the first round series with two of the best three or four players that are not even on the floor." So that's kind of what I was looking at. That's Damian Lillard saying that. It's clear. It's obvious. Jamal Murray's not out there, and this is a guy that really had been coming on and becoming one of the more fun players to watch in the league. Suffered that injury during the regular season, and so Jamal Murray was not playing in this postseason. Will Barton, again, as Damian Lillard mentioned, is out as well. So without those guys, you feel like you have a better chance. But, again, Damian Lillard really has to put everything on his back and the whole team, and that's tough to do in the NBA, to try to win series with like by yourself when you're the only one that is really contributing on a consistent basis and hitting big shot after big shot. And, you know, LeBron did a little bit of that in that Phoenix series. He continued to hit big shots at big times. You can look back to game two there in Phoenix for that. But, you know, you still need help. You need other guys that can do things for you and be there. C.J. McCollum at one point looked like a guy that could help, but he's not really star caliber right now. And obviously is not what he even once was for Portland as far as putting them in situations to where they can be successful and win a series and then move forward to maybe get to the even just to the conference finals before we even think about getting a championship. Dame Lillard that has done everything that has been asked of him. You definitely can't put it on him. Now Portland needs to figure out what they want to do in the offseason, try to find some guys that can step in and really be leaders for them. Well, Dame's the leader, but just even role players, just other stars that'll come to Portland, because that's what it's going to take for the Blazers to have any kind of success moving forward if we're talking about championship success and making it to the NBA Finals and trying to win a championship. So Terry Stotts has been there as the head coach, and there are questions about his future with the Blazers. He's the fourth longest tenured active coach. He's been in Portland since 2012. Only Greg Popovich, Eric Spoelstra, and Rick Carlisle have been with teams longer with their teams. And Stotts kind of talking job security. I'm under contract for two more years. I'm sure just like the end of every year, we're all evaluated, players, coaches, management, we're all evaluated, so we'll see what happens. But all I know is I'm under contract for two more years, unquote. That's not a guy that feels real confident about what's going on. You can tell that. The Blazers have made eight consecutive postseason appearances, the longest streak in the NBA, but they've lost in the first round five of those eight times, reaching the Western Conference Finals in 2019. They were swept by the Warriors, one of two coaches in Blazers history with 400 wins, along with Jack Ramsey, the only coach Lillard has ever had at Portland. So we'll see how it all goes and if Terry Stotts is back and what Portland can do moving forward with Dame Lillard as their superstar and leader. Also in the NBA playoffs coming up tonight, the Clippers and Mavs in the first round here this evening, as the Clippers are supposed to win, right? Even though it's in Dallas, the road team has won every single game in this series so far. Dallas won first two in L.A. Clippers won the next two in Dallas. Dallas then went back to L.A. to win game number five, and the Clippers and Mavericks play tonight at 8 o'clock. And whoever wins this series gets the right to move on to face the number one seed Jazz. So that's where we're at right now in the Western Conference playoffs. Again, this is the only series that's still going in the first round, game six tonight in Dallas, with tip-off at 8 o'clock. Coming up tomorrow, they'll start the second round series in the East semifinals between the Bucks and Nets at 6:30 tomorrow night. And then Sunday, Hawks and 76ers will play their first game the second round of the East Conference semifinals at noon. And then Sunday at 2:30 will be Game 7, if necessary, between the Mavericks and Clippers. Nuggets and Suns will start their series coming up on Monday. So that's where we're at with NBA playoffs here currently. All right, NHL playoffs. I'm going to pick the Mavericks to win tonight, even though the road teams won every game in that series. I'm going to pick Dallas here tonight to finish it off and move on to the second round against the Utah Jazz, the number one seed. NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, looking at what happened last night, two overtime games as the Bruins beat the Islanders 2-1 in the East second round, game three in overtime. So that series, Boston now leads 2-1 after that win in New York. And then the Hurricanes over the Lightning 3-2 as Tampa Bay still leads 2-1 in the series. But again, Carolina getting the overtime win on Thursday there in Tampa Bay. Coming up here in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs tonight, the Canadiens and Jets. 6:30 start time in Winnipeg as Montreal leads that series 1-0. That's in the north second round of the west second round. The Colorado Avalanche unbeaten so far in the playoffs. They have a 2-0 series lead on the Golden Knights. They're headed to Vegas for game three of their second round series in the west. That starts at 9 o'clock tonight in Vegas. So update on what's going on in the NHL. All right, we're going to wrap the sports ticket with some notes about the French Open and an unfortunate situation yesterday in the French Open on the women's side. They've already lost second seed Naomi Osaka, who, as well documented, withdrew from the tournament because of her not wanting to meet with media for press conferences due to some mental health issues that she's dealing with. So, that was her decision. She didn't want to do that, so she withdrew from the tournament. We talked about that earlier this week. Now the number one seed is out of the tournament as the world number one, Ash Barty, left heartbroken Thursday night after she was forced to retire during the match. Again, as I said on the preview, she's just retiring from the match, not from the sport. Sometimes it gets confusing when people hear, oh, she retired in the middle of her match. Why'd she do that? Well, she was injured and gave up the match. Forfeited, basically, would be a better way to put that. She was hurt during her second round match with Poland's Magda Linette, as she knew full well going into the tournament. She was in tears all week, knowing that a hip injury was about to ruin her French Open campaign. The Aussie Stars' bid to regain the title she won in 2019 ended in anticlimactic circumstances. She looked like a shadow of herself there and lost the first set 6-1, underwent a medical timeout to see if she could somehow battle through the match. After a brief revival at the start of the second set, she cut a despondent figure. This is from the story from Yahoo Sports, as she offered her hand to Linette with the scores locked at 2-2, and she said, I'm done. She did say in her post-match press conference, it was heartbreaking. We've had such a brilliant clay season, and to get a little bit unlucky with the timing of this injury, something acute happening over the weekend and just running out of time, it's disappointing, but it won't take away the brilliant 3 months that we have had. As much as it hurts right now, I've had my fair share of tears this week. It's all good. Everything happens for a reason. There will be a silver lining in this eventually. So Ash Barty, the number one seed on the women's side, is out of the French Open. Again, number two seed Naomi Osaka out as well. So the field seems to be blowing wide open on the women's side. We'll see who is going to come away with the championship. Again, third round matches are going on today and getting rolling on the women's side. Aryna Sabalenka, the number three seed, actually got beat already today. So the top three seeds are now done at the French Open. So it continues to stay open. Right now, Serena Williams, the number seven seed, is taking on Danielle Collins, a fellow American. Collins up 2-1 in the first set in that match. Madison Keys, a 23rd seeded American, was eliminated earlier today by a 15 seed Victoria Azarenka. So let's look at what's going on there on the women's side and then on the men's side. Let's see if there's anything. Alexander Zverev, the number six seed, has moved on to the next round. Daniil Medvedev looks pretty good against Riley Opelka, the 32nd-seeded American. And John Isner will take on 5th-seed Stefanos Tsitsipas coming up later this afternoon. And Medvedev is the number 2-seed there and looking like he's in pretty good position to move on. Yesterday at the French Open, Novak Djokovic, the number 1-seed, Rafael Nadal, the 3-seed, both got straight-set wins. A 4-set win for Roger Federer, the 8-seed, over Marin Cilic. And also, the biggest upset yesterday, Gaël Monfils from France, the homeland for him at the French Open. He was upset, the 14 seed, as he's out of the tournament. American Sofia Kenin as well as Sloane Stephens, Coco Gauff, and Jen Brady have all moved on to the third round, and their matches are set to take place, I believe, on Saturday there at the French Open. So again, 1, 2, and 3 are out on the women's side. 1, 2, and 3 are very much alive on the men's side. Again, Djokovic, along with Medvedev and Nadal, the top three seeds on the men's side, and all three of them are still alive in the French Open. So we'll keep you up to date when next week they'll roll through. The French Open finals are coming up next weekend. Should be the 11th or the 12th and 13th, I guess, for the French Open finals there at Roland Garros. So that's what we have for the sports ticket here today. We thank everybody for tuning in, and we're looking forward to, again, next week, 8-man All-Star games. If you have a chance to go up to the State Line All-Star basketball games, again, those start at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Introductions will start at 2:45 for the girls' game. State Line All-Star information at ncksports.com. And if you missed our interview this morning with Sawyer Hovenstein, the new head coach of the Rock Hills football team, it's posted at katycountry94.com. That'll do it for today. Have a great weekend, everybody.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.